Lucas Barfield.
And I'm Uncle Dig.
Yeah. Welcome to the Cannabis Corner.
And we are back on the Cannabis Corner. My name is Lucas Barfield, and I am joined by my co-host. What's going on today, Uncle Dig?
Oh, not much. Just enjoying a fine spring day. We are still due to get a little more snow in Southern Oregon. We are having a very wet spring, and we are all very thankful for it.
Yeah, we are going to be getting some more rain coming up this weekend. A big storm's coming in, and they were having bomb cyclones and snow down in California as well. So it's really been kind of a crazy end of winter getting into spring here in the Northwest and the West Coast, too. So that's going to kind of move us into our monologue. We're going to talk about a stormy legislative session going on down in Olympia, Dig. And a couple shows ago, we were telling the audience about some bills that were down there. One of those was our home grow bill that we're always talking about, HB 1614, I believe it was. That bill, once again, made it to the Appropriations Committee and then was stopped. Disappointed on that, but not necessarily surprised. Now, next year, it will pick up right there in that same place, so it's a little closer to making it out of the House. But the bill's never even made it to the Senate, Dig, so who knows what's going to happen when it gets over there.
Oh, yeah, it's still got a long way to go. I've been really disappointed that it's been so hard to get what we here in Oregon consider a fundamental cannabis, you know, freedom and part of legalization, home grow. It's been such a struggle to even get it to tread water or even get it out for a vote in Washington state. So sometimes, it's just very frustrating sometimes the way Washington has gone two steps forward and three steps back on this cannabis thing over the years.
But a little good news is that the arrest protection bill, and I've heard this on the news the other day on the radio. Now, they got the actual description of the bill totally wrong, but they did say that the bill was heading up to the governor's, or soon will be heading to the governor's desk. And that is the bill that will protect medical cannabis patients who aren't registered from arrest. Now, believe it or not, there's two types of medical cannabis patients in Washington state. One of those types, just someone who possesses just the sheet of paper and not a actual laminated card, that does not protect you from arrest. So that is a little quirk in the law. They're trying to fix that. The medical cannabis tax break bill is not dead, but it's actually moved into the budget negotiations, which goes on way longer because it affects the budget. So I'm not even sure where that's going to land. But I wanted to bring the audience's attention to something that's going on, and that is the ongoing debate here in Washington State about drug possession. And the Blake decision decriminalized all drugs here in the state, but the state legislature is about to put a criminal penalty back onto drug possession. It started out as a gross misdemeanor in the Senate. It's moved over to the House. Now they just moved it down to a misdemeanor, but it's going back to the Senate. So who knows where that's going to end up, but at the least, and I'm pretty disappointed about this outcome, at the least, drug possession will go back to being a misdemeanor here in Washington State instead of just something that is decriminalized.
Well, that's unfortunate because it seems like the Washington State Legislature is very slow to reform itself. And it doesn't seem like y'all have as robust a referendum system in Washington where you can gather signatures and get your government to do what you want it to do, whether they want to do it or not. So I think there's a lack of accountability for y'all's government. And it's really frustrating. And it's something that everyone should look at and do their best not to emulate. And that goes double for Washington's cannabis system as well.
Yeah, like you were just saying, we go two steps forward and three steps back. But, you know, progress, I mean, I guess it's not a felony anymore, but still, it'll be a misdemeanor and then some type of drug treatment, and then apparently you could get the misdemeanor dropped. But for working class people and people that are houseless, these drug possession, these drug courts and all these different things, it's an extreme burden on people's life, and most of the time, people do walk away with a criminal record. So we are really wanting to decriminalize all drugs. And the big question I have on this, Dig, is Why are we living in a society where somebody needs to use these really hard drugs and check out for a week? You know, it's really what we want to get to, housing, employment, healthcare. You know, that's going to help our drug problem, not throwing people in cages and making them go to court.
Agreed.
So I wanted to let the audience know that all the way up through season 5 of The Cannabis Corner is over on YouTube. You can search The Cannabis Corner on YouTube, and we have all of our seasons up there, except for the 4 shows of this one, this 6th season. They are all on YouTube, so you can go check those out. You can also find them in the Tacoma Public Library under The Cannabis Corner, and over on Radio Tacoma, we have our own page there with all the episodes of The Cannabis Corner if you're wanting to listen online. And now, let's check the news.
This is a Cannabis Sativa special report.
We're going to get to our first story, and this was actually some good news out of the Washington State Legislature, and this was all over the news today on the radio and all over the internet, and that is that Washington State is actually to make it possible for people to get jobs without a drug test prior to employment. And this is going to really help a lot of people get more jobs, because I know a fair amount of people who use cannabis and they can't get a job because you have to take a drug test before getting employed.
Yeah, and this doesn't outlaw pre-employment drug screening. It just outlaws pre-employment cannabis screening.
Yes.
And this bill is like we say about steps in the right direction. Now, this doesn't take 2 steps back, but it still allows for your work to impose drug testing on you if there's an accident, stuff like that. So it's still imperfect, and it still allows for certain drug-free workplaces. So it's a necessary reform, but I don't think it goes far enough.
Yeah, it could go further, but I had to take a drug test to work at Walmart. So for those kind of drugs, for a lot of those jobs, you definitely don't need a drug test to work for the
certain employees. Well, right, and I think there's a carve-out in this law where police still can't use cannabis. And I, for one, think that we should allow the police to use cannabis. I think it would go a long way to destigmatize cannabis for some of our most ill-informed members of the citizens, the police, about cannabis, and it might even serve to make Ed Troyer a little less dangerous.
Yeah, we could hope, and I just heard a news story today that suicides with police and firefighters is way up, so that's the leading cause of death, not things out on the job. I think having firefighters and police having access to cannabis on the job or after work would be really good to help with their PTSD, to help with some of the symptoms that they're having to get out there and deal with all this going on right now.
You know, you make up an excellent point, and I wasn't being fair, because there are other public employees besides the police. Like,
yeah.
There's the guy who files the paperwork at the jail. There's the lady who's the county clerk who does the paperwork for your marriage certificate. They drug test that lady.
Yeah.
Why are they drug testing the lady who has to file your marriage certificate? This is not high stakes stuff. She's not driving. Let her smoke a little weed on the weekend. This is not fair. You can do better, Washington.
We are going to be moving out to the Pacific Ocean and out to Hawaii and talk a little bit about what's going on over there with cannabis legalization. And once again, Hawaii, and they've been trying this year after year after year, but this year it got a little further just to legalize adult use period. That's what they're trying to do. It flew through the Senate. They added some stuff in there. It looked like a pretty good bill. They like just had civil penalties if you were growing cannabis outside of the regulated market. So kind of put some decriminalization pieces in there.
Right.
But it went over to the House and it just stopped. But the governor said he was going to sign it. But it's just odd to me that it just, and they did this thing, which is very frustrating in the legislature, where they don't vote on it or anything. They just let it die because they don't pass it by a certain deadline. So the House just didn't even pick it up and the bill just died.
You might say, you know, you might hear people say, oh, they killed it in committee, or they waited, like this one, they waited to put it up for a vote until after a deadline, so they just let it expire rather mm-hmm. than voting on it. It's basically a way for a couple of people in the legislature who like hold key joints in committee. This is why in all these representative bodies like the Congress, the United States, and the Senate, and all of these places, they have these committee appointments, and everyone fights over these committee appointments. I'm like, they don't actually want to go to the committees, but they can kill each other's bills before they ever see the light of day in these committees by just refusing them to advance them past committee. So basically, this is going against the will of most of the people in Hawaii
yep.
and the governor of Hawaii. So everyone wants cannabis to be legal in Hawaii, except apparently the House of Representatives. And I think that people in Hawaii, if they really care about this subject, they should probably find out who these bad actors are in the House of Representatives and do their best to make sure they're not elected next year.
You know, I was surprised, though, with the poll numbers. They said only 52% supported adult use and 31% were outright against it. Those numbers seemed the support seemed a little low, and the outright against it, 31% is not low percentage. And
well, I think you know, have to look at demographics.
Yeah, I was just going off the poll numbers in the article there that they had given there. But if one thing I would say about Hawaii not passing it, if they're looking over here across the water over here to the United States, the mainland, and what's going on with the cannabis industry over here right now, I feel like maybe you can't even hardly blame them being a little wary of bringing this into their state, because there's just so much unknowns. And like it or not, there's not a whole lot of states that are doing the adult use like really great these days. New Mexico's doing okay, but a lot of them are having these just out of control problems.
Yeah, I don't think it's us as a consumer. It's not our responsibility, or even a home grower or a cannabis media person, to take responsibility for the outlaw behavior of either the police or the people that grow cannabis illegally. It's not our problem. It's not something I necessarily even care about. We're failing to regulate the cannabis industry properly, just like we're failing to regulate the petrochemical industry properly, or the transport of those chemicals across waterways, railroads properly, right? We're seeing fires in food plants because they're not following fire regulations, because they don't hire inspectors because of Trump's deregulation push. More chemical plants are exploding in Texas. Mm-hmm. We don't regulate industries properly in America. So to expect cannabis to be any different is naive. So why regulate it at all?
Yeah, but Hawaii over there, they're out there by themselves. They're looking at that going, we don't want any of that. So, you know, I don't know what's going on in the minds of the Hawaiian legislatures, but something's going on if the whole House just said, no, we don't want it. It didn't say just a couple people were against it. It just stopped. So we'll keep an eye on the Hawaii legalize it. They do have a medical system over there. So medical patients are being taken care of in Hawaii. So that is a good thing. So let's hope that sooner or later Hawaii will get some type of legalization.
All right.
So on to our next story, which is we're going to talk about Leafly for a minute. And Leafly, if you're not familiar with that, is a online website. I first became familiar with Leafly all the way back in 2013 when I went and got my first medical cannabis card. On the way out the door, one of the sheets that they gave me was talking about Leafly and what they did. And at that time, they were largely just a strain database, and they had all the strains right on there, and you could find a lot of information about strains. But they have been around for a really long time and are based here in Seattle and have made themselves an established part of the cannabis community. And this is kind of some bad news, but a sign of the times. They're going to stop doing the Leafly news, which you were telling me before the show is really a disappointing fact for you.
Well, yeah, you know, and I'm not, you know, I'm not like, I understand that people have problems with Leafly and other places like Weed Maps business practices, but they were one of the few places that did really good reporting. I don't know if you remember about back at a couple 3 years ago. It's been a while. The vitamin E acetate they were putting in vapes. Mm-hmm. A lot of that on the ground reporting was done by Leafly or on a Leafly affiliate. They do a really cool end of the year cannabis jobs report.
Yep.
They did a lot of really good coverage that I don't think anyone else is doing quite the same way. So when they said that they're getting rid of their newsroom, I was kind of upset because I don't know of any other cannabis publications doing this kind of on the ground reporting that can be somewhat adversarial with the industry.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cost them a lot of money to do those on the ground reports, because I've done a couple on the ground sort of like direct news stories rather than covering headlines and things like that. And it's a lot of travel, it's a lot of time. So if they're paying their reporters well, which they probably are, they were well funded over there at Leafly, then it's going to cost them a lot. And I'm know this 100%, the advertising dollars are kind of drying up for some of these sites because of the pullback on the cannabis industry. So they're having to cut back on some of these. And so I feel like this news thing at Leafly is a direct result of the advertising dollars drying up. And I agree. I think it's a really big loss, because it's really hard and difficult to do those on the ground things. And there's nobody, Vice was doing a lot of these, that website. But I haven't seen as much of those recently as I used to.
Well, it's funny. It takes capitalists not to be able to make money doing weed.
Corporations are people, my friend.
Yeah, it's just been it's been crazy, and I think that it's been very disappointing seeing this downturn in cannabis, and seeing that a lot of what was driving all of these bad business practices, this low interest rate, excess cash. And when it dried up, all of these supposed big dogs, quote unquote, couldn't even pay their bills. So all these people that came in with this unlimited capital to wipe out mom and pop can't even hang without their angel investors. It's been kind of gratifying and fun to watch how pathetic they've been, but it's also been frustrating because it's taking out some of the good things with it as well. And some of the good things that money brought was advertising dollars to things like you said, like this newsroom at Leafly, and some of this other stuff that people aren't covering anymore. I feel like the cannabis space was saturated, and now people are kind of actively avoiding it. And that sucks.
All right. Our last story, and this is more what we were just talking about, the cannabis pullback. We're going to go down to Oregon. And this is talking about how Oregon produced twice as much cannabis as they needed a year ago. And so, of course, the prices are tanking. They were saying 95% of the cannabis in Oregon is produced outdoors. They are growing a lot. But, it's a fluctuation of the market up and down. But I just feel like you were just saying, leave it to a capitalist not to be able to make money off of weed. I just feel like they're putting some of these companies are just putting way too much into marketing, sales, all the different packaging, and all the different crazy products they're coming out with, and it's just turning the industry upside down because they can't keep it up. Because like they were saying in the article, Oregon's not getting any new customers. You had the people that were like in the illicit market say, hey, we're going to try out the legal market. They came in and they're like, some of them stayed and some of them went back to the illicit, but there's nobody new coming in.
No. Yeah. And that, most people who consume cannabis in Oregon are probably established cannabis consumers. You've got people, coming of age.
Yeah.
But I don't know what percentage of those people don't become loyal customers at a cannabis shop, or you know, immediately are captured by the illicit market or start home growing. You know, there's a lot of competition out there, and I don't think home growers really can competing with the shops. But like you said, the illicit market probably is. But I think the illicit market in Oregon has shrunk since the end of the pandemic. I think a lot of what drove the what has always driven the illicit market in Oregon is usually out of state sales, right? So there's some weed that goes to shops, and there's some weeds that get sent out of state or sent up to Portland. But like the illicit market in Oregon is kind of a misnomer. Like I think that, yeah, there is a small, like, you know, gray market for weed here, but I think a majority of like the black market weed in Oregon does not stay in Oregon. It goes elsewhere, if that makes sense.
It's the boom and bust system of capitalism. That's a whole nother show, but it's the thing is with the cannabis industry is so new. So these boom and bust cycles do hurt small business owners and some of these small grows. And so we really hope that they can make it through, and we need to get this fixed, quit all the exclusory licensing and everything. Let's try to bring in the illicit market to the regulated market, figure out how to work with it. However you do that, like you said, just don't regulate and decriminalize it. Home grows.
Yeah, I want to be able to sell my clones at the farmer's market on Thursday.
Right. Yep.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Advocates for Medical Cannabis. Learn more about this organization at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com.
Uncle Dig's garden update. It is April 27th, 2023, and I am in gardening zone 8B, and this is Uncle Dig with your garden update. I generally don't go outside permanently until after May 9th or Mother's Day, whichever comes first, as it helps me remember other things in my life and because I know the light cycle won't flower most photo period cannabis plants. Before we get into the photo period garden update, let's talk about how these last two bust down Patek autoflowers from Gem Seeker Genetics yielded. The bust down Patek 2 yielded 2.01 ounces, and the bust down Patek 4 yielded 1.73 ounces. It was a very good winter autoflower run. I grew out a total of 6 plants and got 11.74 ounces. So I'm very happy. Now let's talk about what will the outdoor photo period run looks like, okay? So every year for the past couple of years, I have been running a mixture of regular seeds and feminized seeds in my outdoor gardens. I like some things that aren't available in feminized seeds, so if I want to grow them, I have to buy regular seeds and sex them at home. I don't grow cannabis male plants because I have no interest in breeding, and I don't want seeds in the cannabis that I'm going to be consuming. There are two ways you can spot males. You can wait for them to express their sex naturally, and or you can clone them and flower the clones or the original plants to determine sex and then grow out, you know, what you have left. I use both methods to ensure 100% success rates at determining gender. This double method hasn't failed me yet. So 5 of the 10 photo period plants in my garden turned out to be male. Both the Wedding Crasher bag seed plants were male, as well as 2 of the Fire of Maroof plants. The Soul Gelato 33 bag seed was male. Very disappointing. That left me with 5 plants left to clone and sex. The Jaeger bag seed, 3 Fire of Maroof plants, and the Forbidden Fruit bag seed. All the plants are doing pretty well except the Jaeger, and she only has a slight nitrogen deficiency. I will most likely up-pot all these plants in like 3 days to 3-gallon smart pots. I took clones 3 days ago, and I took 2 clones off each plant. I hope to sex 1 clone and use the spares for something else. The reason I want to wait 3 days to up-pot these girls is because I topped each of the plants today to encourage more lateral branching and to keep their heights at manageable levels until they go up into their final containers. I don't like to do anything traumatic to the plants except after they've had given 3 days to recover. So generally, if I've cut off some branches or whatever, I won't up pot or do some other shock until they've had 3 days to recover from the initial shock. Whatever it is, whether I'm trellising, training, topping, whatever, I don't go at it multiple days at a time. Once I determine which plants are female, I will be germinating feminized seed to fill the holes in my garden. Also, some plants shock out when brought from artificial light into the sunlight. Those plants will be destroyed and replaced as well. I have plans for an outdoor autoflower garden as well this year, but we're not there yet. That isn't even really a good idea until late May at the earliest, due to ambient nighttime temperatures. I will fill y'all in more on that plan later. I have to move a bunch of soil out of the way, and I tore out my old chicken fence. This year, I am doing organic dry amendments only run in 20-gallon smart pots. I will mix Fox Farms and all-purpose 444 fertilizer and worm castings at first, and that will be my initial mix. I will then amend with only dry amendments after that. I'm trying to keep this as intellectually and physically simple as possible this year due to a persistently troubling back injury and a desire to enjoy what physical prowess I have left on some hiking trails this year. So I've scaled back the vegetable garden in that regard. In that there isn't one. I hope to use these 20-gallon pots as no-till beds, or at least as stationary beds. I like the idea of constantly building the soil for years and seeing what happens. I have used larger containers in the past, but I have both physical and financial limitations I did not have in the past. But the wheel turns for us all. That's it for the garden update. Let's overgrow the world.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Advocates for Medical Cannabis. Learn more about this organization at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com.
And we are back for this week's review. And this week we are reviewing an e-dab rig called the Dr. Dabber XS. And you may be familiar with Dr. Dabber because they have a Switch and Evo dab rigs. But the new XS really takes those and improves on it by making it a smaller and more compact package. And I want to go over real quick in the review what comes with the device, how to use it, and some of the things that I like about it. So, as I mentioned, it is an e-dab rig. And what that means is it is battery powered and it helps you consume concentrates, things like rosin, oils, shatter, different things of that nature. There are so many different products out there these days that's nearly endless, the things that you can use with this. But many people use dabs using torches, and it's a involved process where you heat up a surface really hot and you drop a concentrate on there and it vaporizes the cannabis oil, and then you inhale the vapors. So this does that same thing, but without the torch, without plugs, and without having to heat things up via various other methods. This does it all with a battery, and it's small enough to fit in like a handbag or a purse. So for those of you who are looking at this in the picture, you'll notice that there's a couple different things come with this. First thing you'll notice is it's kind of odd looking. It has this reservoir off to the side that's glass, and that is for putting your water in there. So it acts like a little kind of bong filterization. And I'm going to hit this real quick so you can kind of hear that this thing really does have some pull on it. So it really does do a good job filtering. So that's really the first thing you'll notice that comes with this. And the way they have blown the glass is it's spill-proof. The audience knows that I am blind and I have a tendency to knock things over. And I have came into my area many times and found this knocked over for whatever reason, whether I was reaching for something or had knocked it over before by moving a table or whatever I was doing there, I'd find this knocked over, but it doesn't spill. Because the way they've blown the glass is it's just the water won't come out very easily. We'll talk about here in a minute how to get the water in there. But that's the first thing you'll notice is this really cool side piece here that's actually filtering. And then, of course, we have the battery, which is probably about 3 inches tall and looks to be about an inch in diameter. And it's really nice ergonomically designed where it has like a hand grip there. So that's really cool. And then it also comes with a carb cap. Glass, that's really nice. And then of course we have the atomizer and the little small area where you put the dabs. This is really cool because it's all sealed up tight, because as you mentioned, it has the water here, it also has the oils around and everything, and so it has some really tight rubber seals, so when you put the glass down over the top of it, it seals, it is airtight. I'll show you that here in a minute when we talk about how to use it. But then it has the atomizer ceramic. It's actually metal on the outside, but I think the inner piece there is ceramic. Whatever it is, it's got a little divot there where you drop your dabs into it, and that screws down in there. And as I mentioned, you put the glass down over the top and it's just a really tight seal. So that's basically the big pieces that come with this. So some of the smaller pieces that come in the package is it comes with a little tiny dab tool that's really nice, where you can put the dab into the little divot there and then you can kind of tap it down. It also comes with a silicone collar to hold the carb cap, and it also comes with a cool little cute little silicone funnel where you can use it to fill up the glass piece on the side, because it has just a little tiny small mouthpiece, and so that funnel really makes it easy to fill it up with water. So that's what comes in the package and what you can expect when you get the Dr. Dabber. So let's talk about how to use this thing. As you can see from the picture, it has a funny little look to it. You can do it a couple different ways. So you can fill it up with water with the funnel. You can do this two different ways. You can take the glass off and put your dab in there ahead of time, and then put it over the top and then start it up. Or you can use the carb cap. You can take the carb cap off and it has that nice silicone sleeve that holds it, and then heat it up and then put your dab in there that way over through the top. So there's a couple of different ways you can load it. And then the carb cap also has a very tight, airtight seal. And then we get to so once you have it loaded or you're ready to load it, I always put my dabs in there first. As I mentioned, I'm blind, so I use like a harder crumble type dab with this. But I have had a friend over and we used like a regular dab, and we just heated it up real hot, got it going, and then as it heated up, took the dab and dropped it in there on it. And then one time we also just took the dab and scraped it off on the atomizer there and then heated it up secondary. And it works every different way. And so the way the battery works is you have the ergonomic handle and you can hold it perfectly in your hand. And what you do is you hit it 5 times and it'll start it up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And as you see, it vibrates to get it going. It has 4 different temperature settings, starting at 475 and going all the way up in 625. The two in the middle are in the 500 ranges, and they are designed for different types of dabs, do different types of temperatures. Some folks like to get the terpenes first with the lower temps and then burn off some of the other compounds later with higher temperatures. Some people, like myself, it's just easier for me to use. I started off on the highest level and just keep it there, and that works pretty well for me. And so what you can do is you can change the temp by hitting the button 3 times. Now, I'm not going to change it because I have it on green. It has different colors, green, blue, cyan, and one other color that represent the different temperatures. So you hit it 3 times and it changes. I don't want to change it because, like I said, I'm blind. I have it set on green. If I get it off of green, I'm going to have a hard time getting it back on there because I can't see it. But for you or most people watching this, or listening to this, you can just hit three times and it changes the temps. Really easy to get it started. Now, I'm going to get it started, but I'm not going to hit it on the audio. But the way you get it started is, I will start it up, is you hold it down for 5 seconds. There you go. And then it... set it right here on the mic and you'll hear it, because it'll go, and then as it heats up, it'll sit there, and you can hear the dabs bubbling in there as it gets going, and then it'll vibrate whenever it's heated up all the way, and then you can there you go. So it's ready to go, and so you pull on it, and what you can do is you take your finger. Oops, I accidentally changed the temp. So what you do is you take your finger and you put it on the top, and you kind of push your finger up, you know, work that card cap, the card there, and you can get a really good hit off of this thing. I don't consume cannabis on air, but trust me, this thing, I'm using it a lot. I'm a medical cannabis patient. On those days where my shoulder might be just hurting a little more, or just having a hard time with my vision or something that day, this is something that I go to often to use this Dr. Dabber XS. So if you want one of these, check out the links on the Cannabis Corner blog, or go over to godentrepreneurs.com and you can find a link. But so that is how to use the device. It is really simple to use. Now let's talk about cleaning for a second. One of the things I want to mention is, if you try to do like big, massive dabs, it will clog it up. So I'm just going to be upfront with that. It's for mid-size and smaller dabs, which personally I'm totally okay with. But if you're going to try to do like a half a gram dab with this, this is not the thing that you want to do it, because it'll clog it. But if you get it clogged, like I have clogged it, you can clean it. And so another thing that it comes with is some alcohol-soaked Q-tips that will help clean out the little pieces of it. And then you could, of course, use the thing that everybody likes to use, the salt and alcohol, put it in this glass part, shake it up, and clean it. The same friend that came over with those dabs before we did them, which was a really nice pineapple dab, by the way. It was really great. Oh, actually, it was grapefruit cannabis. The strain was really great. But we cleaned it first because it was kind of dirty. It took us about 15-20 minutes to clean it. We cleaned it up really good, got all the alcohol, and it just works so nice. So it was really easy to clean, but it is something that you're going to have to clean about once a month, probably, if you're using it a lot. So it will need cleaning, because it has some small little air passages here, but it's, like I said, it's not that difficult to clean. And that is sort of the maintenance of this thing. So here's what I like about this is, number one, is like I mentioned, it's spill proof. So you can knock it over, it doesn't spill. You can put it in like as long as you keep it upright, don't turn it upside down, the water won't spill out. So you can carry it like in a backpack or something. If you had like a little case for it or something, you could carry it, or you just keep it in your purse or your bag. As long as you keep it upright, it won't spill. So it's totally portable. Also, I really like just how easy it is to put together and use. It's just so simple. As being blind, sometimes things can be a little complicated, and it's really hard to use certain devices because of the temperatures are digital. You got to see the screen to be able to set the temperatures and things like this. This thing's totally up front, just 3 clicks, and it's there. You got it changed. So it's really easy to use. And the next thing I really like about it is how easy it is to clean. It's just easy to clean and easy to maintain. And this device has made dabbing totally accessible for me. Something that I was not able to do before. Usually I had to take concentrates and put them in like a bowl or something, because like I can't use a torch. I can't put a dab onto a 600 degree nail. Being blind is just not going to work. So this has made dabbing totally accessible. So that is something that I really like about this, and then very happy with it. I really want to thank Dr. Dabber XS for sending this over and letting me review it. If you'd like to see a written review of this, you can go over to godentrepreneurs.com. or you can find a link to buy this on our blog at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com. That was my quick review of the Dr. Dabber XS. I hope I covered everything about this. I could talk about it way longer, I think, because it's just so much fun to use and such a great little piece. And it's just a neat little, I'm impressed with it just because it's a really cool piece of engineering. It's just the neatest little thing. The glass is very well made. It's very strong glass. I've tipped it over and I'm not really worried about breaking it. I mean, if you drop it on the floor or something, it's definitely going to break. But the carb cap here is just like a big solid chunk of glass. Same with the piece that fits down over the top of the atomizer. It's really thick and you can tell that it's not going to break if you use it correctly, and it's got this tight seal and everything on it. So I'm just really impressed with this device. Go get you a Dr. Dabber XS, and thanks again for listening, and have a great day. And now on to our It's a Bus segment. And this is the part of the show where we talk about the continued war on drugs and the continued war on cannabis. And this episode of the It's a Bus segment, we are going to Tennessee to, I have to say, Dig, probably one of the worst It's a Bus, most shocking It's a Bus that we have ever covered. And I honestly feel it's not getting enough news coverage for the insanity that happened to this family in Tennessee.
Yeah, this is kind of wild, man.
And so just to recap.
Yeah, I'll go into it, man, yeah. So this man and this woman were traveling with their five children, and they were stopped by a Tennessee Highway Patrol officer. And they found a small amount, we're talking 5 grams, of what was to believe to be marijuana. So, of course, Williams, the male driver of the vehicle, was charged with simple possession, which, of course, is wrong and not cool, but that's not even the bad part of the story. Then, mother is present, right? They've charged the driver with possession, mother's still here, but the Child Protective Services took control of the children. So they stole their children.
Yeah. She went to try to go bail him out. And then when she showed up to the jail, the Child Protective Services of Tennessee came swooping in and took the 5 kids, one of which was a breastfeeding baby. And I just want to mention that this family is a black family, and I just want to say that that is the number one reason they were arrested and had their kids taken in Tennessee, because they had the cannabis. But it's just the ongoing war on black people, especially in the South. And this is just this is just one example of what's going on down in the South when it comes to this. This kind of stuff is happening all the time.
They didn't even have any evidence that the mother used cannabis. Those drug results tests are pending. They ripped a baby from her mother's breast. Over 5 grams of weed that her husband, like, that's so messed up.
Yeah, and they made her take a hair follicle test before she gets her kids back, and like you just mentioned, those tests are still pending. So this story has not ended, and I honestly wanted to get mother on the show, but I wanted to make sure that this was all done because it's all so sensitive. It's just an insane story, and so if you're out there listening, check this out. Put this on your news feed and keep an eye on this. Call your senators. Tell folks about this story, because I feel like this should get up to the news a little more, because this is what happens. This is the end result of what happens when you continue to put this prohibition thing out there front and center. And anything like here in Washington State, with the home, like a black man right now in Washington State is 5 times more likely to get arrested for home growing cannabis than their white counterparts. This thing here in Tennessee is the end result, one of the worst things you could happen because of that prohibition. And it's still going on all around the country.
This is why the fight's never really over, is because you could take a wrong turn at Albuquerque and this kind of shit can happen to you.
Yeah, it's a very... very disturbing, as you can tell from Dig and I talking about it. I've been watching this story for going on a month, and yeah, it's just something that I'm from the South, so it really bothers me a lot because I've seen a lot of this. And like I said, this kind of stuff is going on a lot. In Alabama, they were taking mother's kids if they tested positive for drugs. They would come in and take your they would take your kid if you were pregnant and you had your baby in jail and you tested positive for drugs. They would take your kid. In Alabama, I think they had that same law in Georgia. So it's really some negative stuff going on out there with this.
And they sneak the test on you. So you go in for some prenatal care.
Yep.
And you take a urinary test for your hormones. The doctor will go ahead and test you for cannabis against your will and go ahead and take your other kids. So, like, this doesn't just affect people, like, in a vacuum. It affects everyone who would like to get medical care when they're pregnant. Listen, cannabis can stay in your system for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Just because a young mother tests positive while she's pregnant does not mean she even used while she was pregnant. So this is not; these are not just laws, and they're enabled by continued prohibition.
It's not over. This has been going on for a month plus, and so we will keep an eye on that, and we'll bump this up and put it in our news segment if anything changes on this. So thank you so much for being on the show today, Dig. I would like to thank our guest, and I'd like to thank all our listeners. Don't forget to go over there and subscribe to our YouTube channel, and you can go back and listen to all our old episodes. I have all the way back to episode one, Dig, when I hit R on my laptop and recorded the first Cannabis Corner episode. Don't hold it against me, folks. It was an early podcast. I kept them all raw, Dig, because I wanted to keep the evolution of the show kind of put that out there. So part of doing small radio and podcasting is just kind of learning how to do it. So go over there and check that out on our YouTube channel. And thank you for listening. And see you next time, Dig.
See ya.
If you have questions or would like to comment on the show, you can reach us at thecannabiscorner840@gmail.com. To listen to back episodes or to subscribe to the show, find us all across the internet by searching The Cannabis Corner. How can folks get in touch with you, Dig?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Uncle Dig, and you can listen to my podcast, The Bagseed Chronicles, wherever you get podcasts.
Thank you to Radio Tacoma and KTQA for their continued support. I'd also like to thank Aaron Folsch for his production assistance. And finally, thank you for joining us on The Cannabis Corner.